This episode of the Yes Indeed podcast is brought to you by its incredible patrons. I want to shout out Craig Duffy, Donna McCarthy, Thomas Elliott, Brian Casebolt, Jack Blair, and Eric Schaefer. We just hit 40 patrons this month, and that is an amazing feeling. Thank you so much for everybody who helped support the podcast and keep it going. If you would like to contribute as well, I would appreciate it. There's a link in the description, patreon.com/indierpg. And with that, I think it's time for the interview. Welcome, everyone. I'm sitting down with Indrani Ganguly. Indrani is the marketing manager for Hunters Entertainment, the publisher of Kids on Bikes, Alice is Missing, among various other games. She's also the co-founder of Desis and Dragons, probably very easily India's largest community of tabletop role players, of which I am a humble member. Indrani is also a dice maker, kind of an artisan making beautiful and custom math rocks under the name Nonagon Dice. She was also part of last year's Big Bad Con POC leadership team and organized the India section of the program, where three people from India were invited to attend Big Bad Con 2022. She's also an inductee of the Game Awards Future Class of 2022, which is super cool and huge achievement. Welcome, Indrani. Thanks for coming on to the show. Did I miss anything out? Anything you want to kind of add into the mix there?
No, that's good enough for me, man. Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. I love your work and I have been like keenly following everything you do. So really excited to just like sit down and talk with you. I don't think we've really gotten the chance to do that in the past. So thank you for having me.
This is the classic, instead of having a conversation, let's hit record and pretend it's a podcast. Like,
let's make it a podcast, bro. Like this, I remember seeing this somewhere online like years ago, and it stayed like every time I agreed to a podcast or like do one myself, yeah. I think of this and I feel very embarrassed, but I love it. Is that let's record a podcast is like this sort of generation's version of let's start a band together.
Yes.
This is great.
Yeah.
It's my favorite.
Let's spend 24 hours thinking about cool names and then never record a song. Like that's the...
that's so good.
So my first question is, my understanding is that, of all these achievements in the bio that I listed, it's probably Nonagon Dice or Desis and Dragons. So which of them was the first?
Nonagon Dice was the first. It was like the sort of spawning point for everything that happened afterwards in the most sort of like unimaginable possible, right? For some context, like I grew up on the outskirts of Mumbai, so like a middle of nowhere, nobody knows about this place kind of town, just outside of the suburbs of Mumbai. And nothing really happens there. We got our first McDonald's like in 2018 or something. So that's, if that helps like set the tone. So when I was like, I want to work in games, my parents were like, that's weird. But we'll support you, I guess. So when it actually started, it was just, I'm going to make dice and then we'll see how it plays out. And here we are.
So how does I want to make dice tie in with you discovering games? So obviously you were playing tabletop games and then you get into dice, right? Yeah.
Yes. So the timeline is around the age, we're going way back, around the age of like 10 or 11, because my parents never much like understood or cared about internet safety. I found these like virtual worlds where people were doing like chat-based real-time role-playing, and I found communities that were doing like a lot of like popular fandoms, Star Wars at the time, Harry Potter, Fucked Ups, and like just a bunch of different sort of fandoms where there were these really tight-knit role-playing communities, and I like became very integrated with that space, and I basically grew up on the internet. Like all my friends were like halfway across the world, and I eventually started getting on calls with them and like developed a weird accent that I got made fun of for. Wow. Because those were the only people I was communicating with. Eventually, at I think 16 or 15 maybe, I sort of grew out of it. I was like, okay, this was fun, but my personality needs to like evolve. This can't be the only thing I do in life. But I still enjoyed storytelling. So when I branched out into like playing video games, I met a group of friends, one of them being this person, incredible person called Shubham Mehta, who's the co-founder of Desis and Dragons. he had returned from South Africa and was like, well, I was playing this game called Dungeons and Dragons while I was there, and it's really fun. And, you know, you guys seem like you would enjoy it. Should we give it a shot? We did it. It didn't work out. And then a year later, we tried again, this time like with better understanding of like what works and what doesn't for each other. And yeah, it was sort of like, oh, this is great. I can enjoy the storytelling, building characters, you know, that sort of portion of role playing, and not like just exist virtually, right? And that's when like the idea of dice came in. And as a kid, I've always wanted to be like a collector. You know how people collect stamps and coins and this and that? And like, that's always felt like very cool to me. I was like, one day I'm going to be a collector of something. And I never knew what that was until like Shubham gifted me my first set of like plasticky Amazon dice. And I was like, I need more. And then I looked online and I couldn't find like really nice looking ones, except in the States, where I was like, oh, I can't pay in dollars, man. I can't afford that. So how about I just try to make it myself? Like, how hard could that possibly be? And spoiler alert, it was really difficult. But at that point, it was like sunk cost fallacy. I'm in too deep. I've started. I'm just going to keep going. And that's how dice making began. And I suppose I didn't even do like selling dice or shop updates or anything of that sort until like 2 years after I'd gotten into dice making. I just had this account where I would just like post what dice I was making, because it was like a nice way of me tracking my own journey. And then I guess that sort of attracted the attention of like some people in the larger TTRPG space who were like, you seem to be doing fun stuff. Do you want to come talk to us? And I was like, I suppose. And that's sort of like where my exposure to like the... Because it's weird when someone's like, hey, do you want to talk about yourself for the next hour like we're doing right now? I'm like, I guess if that's what you really want to do with your time. That's kind of where it began. And I was like, oh, there's a whole community outside of this, but that community doesn't really exist in India. It's all very, for the lack of a better word, like Western. And I know there were like, I think this was when RPG SEA and like RPG LATAM were just like just sort of like finding prominence in the space, and I wasn't aware of them. And I was like, it would be really cool to have like a homegrown community. And at the time, I had joined like these WhatsApp groups and whatnot for like RPG players, and there were like what, 70 80 people in there, and everybody knew each other. And I'm like, I'm sure there are people who play and just never talk about it online, but you know, this is maybe a good chance to like create a community around this. And that's how Daces and Dragons happened, which was probably not your original question, but that's no,
I mean, you're doing all the work for me, right? You're just linking these things up.
You're
so
welcome.
My next question is just like, just set up. I go like, so exactly how did Dungeons and Dragons start? But yeah, I totally get you. Like this thing of like starting out as, oh, is there anybody else that does this? Oh, I know 5 people that do this. Okay, I know 70 people that do this. Are there more? Can this keep growing?
Building.
Yeah. So I'm getting this sense that, okay, these WhatsApp groups seemed kind of insular in some way. And you were like, let's kind of like, you know, make something that's more publicly visible or publicly accessible so people can kind of find us. And so how exactly did Daces and Dragons start? So it's you, Shubham, and I think there was a third.
Chirag. Yeah, there was a fourth person, but like due to just ideological differences, we sort of parted ways pretty early on. But the three of us had met through this in-person convention that would happen. It was in Mumbai. It was called Panic Knot. They are incredible people. They recently put out this thing called Maze Magazine, and it's like India's first like TTRPG magazine, which is super cool. But they were doing pre-pandemic these sort of like unofficial conventions where people would go and play D&D and stuff like that. And at this point, I hadn't done the sort of like work to branch out of 5e. Like that was my whole thing up until that point. And I was like, oh, we play and there's more people who play, so let's go to this space. And we went there, we spoke with them, and we met a lot of people. And we were like, yeah, there's really something, there's a lot of value in having a communal space, not just because it allows you to play more games with more people, but also because like there is a sense of I don't know, security and validity in that, because you're like, oh, I'm investing so much of my time and resources and, you know, effort into this. Is there more to it? Like, will it always just stay this thing that I hold on to in my own sort of like mind and heart? Does that make sense? So the idea of like wanting to grow the space and have more people come in sort of spawned off of that, and going online was the next obvious choice. But we didn't really get around to it until like the pandemic really hit. And I think it was 2021 around February or March, where we were like, what if we just started a Discord server, and what if we started like streaming games so that people could see what it was about? The streaming element was less like, oh, let's become streamers, and more just like, let's play these games as like just very visually, you know, proud faces, and be like, oh, look, people who look like us play these games, and you could too. Come play it on this server or wherever you'd like. But just know that this is a possible avenue for you to like explore. And that's sort of where it started. We didn't expect the server to grow as much as it did. We were like, yeah, we'd probably end up with a couple of hundred people, and that would be amazing. And we'll run games all the time. And now it's like this whole sort of like self-sustaining space to some degree, which is wild to me.
And the server is now, I think, upwards of 1,000 people.
Yeah,
but you know, people from across the world. Do you have a good sense of what that breakup is?
Yeah, thanks to Discord, and it, because it's a community server, it allows us to see certain like statistics, and the server is predominantly people from India. Okay. There are a lot of like international members, but what I'm really personally like proud of is that it's not just like people from like metropolitan cities in India. It's not just like Mumbai, Delhi, Chennai, Bangalore, but it's like people who are from like really all across India, which is like, which makes me happy, because often like these nerd culture, like this pop culture stuff just happens, like it's very isolated to like quote unquote like big cities. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I've never necessarily liked that. Like Comic-Con is a great example. Oh God, just glorified kiosks. But it's a great example of how nerd culture is like very accessible just to people in like major cities. So that's something I'm really happy about, is that there's a fairly wide variety of like states from India that people come from to the server. But yeah, it is predominantly folks from India.
Nice.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I totally get what you're saying about nerd culture and things like that. Yeah, I'm sure there is, if we were to sit down and kind of analyze it, access to the internet, the English language, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Like there is
there's so many like barriers to entry just off the bat that exist in like cities outside of like the ones I listed earlier.
It makes sense to me that all this like happened in Bombay as well. Like I remember when Panic Not started, like I heard about it, and you know, I think this was around 2019, and I was like, oh, this is a cool thing that exists. Because in 2019, like, yeah, I was sitting in Chennai feeling quite, you know, didn't know that there was a, you know, how many other people were playing these games or whatever. And I remember, I think I wrote an email to Panic Not. I was like, hey, this is cool. Like, I'm glad. Like, it's cool that you guys exist. And yeah, they wrote back. It was just one of those things.
They're incredible people. But yeah, it was that the sort of logical next step to that felt like we open it up, because a physical convention, incredible as it is, it's limited to the people who can actually travel to it. And like with Discord and like just this sort of like growing ideas of building online spaces.
Yeah. I think this idea of building a community like on the internet that is important and like necessary, if the game is going to be popularized, or if the hobby is going to be popularized rather, like it's communities like this that are going to do that and can enable that. So when you kind of think of yourself as, okay, like I am like building this kind of community, what does that mean for you? Do you have a certain like vision or like goal for Desis and Dragons as a space?
Yes. I have to preface this by saying I've never been a person who's been very good at like looking too far into the future or like planning too far ahead. And we can always sit around and get into why that is. But with that in mind, when we started, it was just like, let's give it a shot. We didn't really think of it growing to where it has. But now that we have, I've sort of like enforced these particular like ideals more proactively. Again, more context. When I was a part of those role-playing communities on the internet, I got to a point where I was like managing a bunch of them. So like I had this like community management experience at a very young age. And I was like, okay, I'm going to translate some of those learnings into this space. So when we started Daces and Dragons, one of the key things was like, this has to be a queer-friendly and like minority-friendly space, even in India. Because like, sure, from the larger like perspective of like the Western, like we're all people of color, and fair enough, like we all have our sort of space where we fit into that sort of picture. But even within India, it's important to like keep in mind the sort of, you know, privileges that exist, right? And historically, I haven't found like outwardly queer spaces that I've been able, like, unless it's like specifically, oh, we're a queer space, that haven't been like, oh, we're a nerd space that is also like super queer friendly. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that was like a sort of key anchor, is that it has to be something that's very openly and outwardly supportive. We sort of were able to establish that because like we have so many folks who have like said that they feel super comfortable just being their selves in that sort of little like ecosystem, or like, I don't know, microbiome, I don't know what to call it, but that was one thing. And the other was, when we started the community, we ended up with people like you, and I don't know if you know 8-Bit, he's one of the moderators on our server. Yes. Folks like you were like, oh yeah, D&D is great, but like there's more to this. And we were like, right, there is more to this. And one of the traps we don't want to fall into is what I see in the West is like, it's become this like monolith, right? Yeah. It takes like this lion's share of like whatever you want to call it, like the market share or people's mind space.
Yeah.
There's people who just play D&D, right? Yeah. And we didn't want to create a space that just played D&D. So early on, we decided that we should actively make sure we're talking about indie games and we're talking about non-D&D TTRPGs, because even though the name Daces and Dragons works great for like a marketing thing, it isn't like, it's like the hook. Like, oh, you know D&D, you like Daces and Dragons, come on in. And okay, now let's play a bunch of incredible TTRPGs, right? So that was like another key anchor, was making sure that we're constantly talking about and sort of exposing our community best we can to TTRPGs that weren't 5e. Those were like the two sort of main things as we started. The streaming thing, I think it's just like a ritual for us now, but that's never sort of like been on top of that priority list, right? We do it because it helps us gain some level of like, A, attention from people who might not have played before. B, it's fun for like our community members to like just come and hang on chat. It's like this space where we're all just fucking around and it's fun. And It holds its own space, but it's never been like a full focus for me up until early last year, where we were like, oh, this is, now that we have like some small presence on the internet outside of our community space, we can use this to like bring more people from India who want to be streamers or who want to like just, you know, play online, and like if they've made their own games, like come play those games. If they want to just, you know, play as cast members or like, you know, just, we can actually facilitate that. So let's start doing that too. So there was a point early last year where we were like, okay, we've streamed enough, just the three of us and four of us or whatnot, but let's get more people. Like, I haven't been on a stream myself in like a hot minute, but we've just been constantly getting like people who've wanted to give it a shot on, and that's become another sort of like anchor for what we're trying to do. And there are more things we want to do in this year and the years to come, and I don't know if we'll get to that point, but something I'd love to do is like a virtual convention. Like, we keep calling it DesiCon, and when it's a TI, like, you know what, WIP name, but there's just like these plans for other things. Like, I'd love to like maybe work with some publishers and create like micro grants for people who want to explore making their own games, because now there's like a thriving sort of like game designer community in Desis and Dragons, and I think that's the one that you're most keyed into. But so like, just want to make sure we're constantly like facilitating things and using whatever, you know, pull or like, I don't know, influence that we have to sort of keep adding resources back into the community for people who want to use them. That's kind of just always been our guiding principle.
Nice.
Cheesy as that sounds.
No, that is not cheesy at all. That's totally cool. I get it. Initially, when I first heard about the server, it did sound like a D&D only server. And so I was surprised when I joined, and like the first game I see is Tree running a member on that server, and they're running like a PBTA game. And I was like, cool, I'm going to sign up for this. And I did. And now like we play games together all the time. So that was cool. I met Fluke in that game as well. And now like we have now played like multiple games, right? Like that game, Crash and Burn, we played another game, and then now we're playing another game. So it's good. This whole promise of, hey, find like-minded people that you can celebrate this hobby with, like that's working, you know, already. And it's just cool.
I don't often have like that perspective. I'll do shit and be like, I don't know if this brings any value to anybody at all. So that makes me really happy. I'm glad. Yeah. Thanks for saying that.
First of all, going back to what you said about kind of, hey, like imbuing certain like values or whatever, like I think that's really important and that's great. There's this thing that we as people who are kind of privileged enough to know certain things, we have to kind of model behavior, right? Things like, you know, building safety tools into play, like all of this stuff. It is some work to inculcate these practices from scratch, right? Like you have to explain to people what a safety tool is, why it's important, and go from there. And that's always a hard conversation, because it sounds counterintuitive to the idea of play almost, right? Like, you know, we're having all these rules, and why is that? Do you not trust me? And it is some work to walk people through the logic of that.
100%. The safety tools thing is a great example of just like us also learning on the job. Like that was not a thing that existed on day one. It started existing after somebody came to us being like, hey, I had a really weird play experience on the server, because they joined a game somebody was running and were like, oh, this wasn't the best experience for XYZ reasons, and it's not indicative of the other experiences I've had, but I wonder if there's a way we can, you know, solve for this. And we spoke with the other people involved, and they were like, oh my god, I didn't realize at all, and this was just like, if I'd known before, I would have been able to. It wasn't like a malicious thing, and we were like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. How do we solve for this? And we looked around and we were like, oh, safety tools are a big part of play that we should just bake into our, like, you know, our community space. And just to provide some context again, the way games work on our server is that people post like, hey, I'm running a game, and it has like details like, what game is it? What system is it? A short description about the game, content warnings. Where are you running it? Are you running it on the server or somewhere else? Like, if it's somewhere else, what age groups are allowed? Like, all of these sort of things, that information that a person needs to sign up, right? And we were like, okay, from now on, we're just going to make sure that you must include XYZ safety tools. We did a few like workshops around safety tools. We were like, hey, this is what it is. We're going to add this in. It's going to be mandatory if you want to post on our server.
So another broad challenge is, first of all, you have to teach people games. They have to be introduced to this wide variety of play styles and things like that, especially if they know only one game before that. And secondly, like this exposure to what might be like a much larger and more like diverse hobby than they imagine, right? Like even the idea of designing games is something that potentially people have to be kind of introduced to. So, you know, you mentioned workshops for safety tools and things like that. What do you do in terms of like helping that kind of information pass down, whether it's like learning games, whether it's learning about the scene in general?
Yes. So we've done a couple of things and to varying degrees of success, I would say. Though I think most successful of the lot and the most fun to actually play, we do these like week-long RPG weeks. And it's basically we have a particular core idea or theme. The first one we did was PBTA week, where we had signups for game masters who were at that point more familiar with these games than say our, you know, newer members, being like, hey, we want to do a week-long sort of marathon of just running PBTA games and we need GMs. Any PBTA system goes, please sign up. And we had like a bunch, I think we had like got like some 20 different PBTA games that people played, and we were running 3 games a day for like 7 days. And once we had that, we opened it up to players. We're like, hey, these are all the games that, you know, these incredible game masters are running. This is a description of the game. Again, content warning, safety tools, description, all of those details baked into that sort of like player sign up as well, right? What interests you? Give us a priority list. Like, give me your top 3, and depending on who signs up first, we'll assign you a few games to play over the course of the week. Everybody at least gets to play 2, and if we don't have that many signups, maybe 3. And we had like an insane amount of people sign up for that, and it was like pretty exhilarating watching all the sort of game rooms just like be filled with people, because not only were people playing, there were other people just spectating, sitting in and listening to games that they weren't playing in. And that's also a way to like just learn about the game, right? It's basically what we wanted to do with the stream as well. So that's been like a really fun way of like introducing people to games. The caveat is that it relies on GMs who know about the system. Thankfully, we have a pretty incredible sort of like group of GMs on the server who are like, yes, I will run this super niche game for you if you want me to. The other thing that we've tried to facilitate the introduction of is open tables, where some GMs on our server who are like, I am very familiar with this system and I am going to create like this section on the server where you can come join a long-running multi-table campaign of whether it's Masks or whether it's like Pathfinder or Call of Cthulhu or Wanderhome, and you hop in and hop out whenever you want, and it's a living world where other people are influencing, you know, the same sort of story. And that's been really successful. Like Siva, who's one of our mods, and he's an incredible adventure writer as well. He runs the Masks open table on our server, and he runs it in a city called Purva, which is like this fictional version of like metropolitan Mumbai. And it is my favorite thing in the world. And that's something like people immediately gravitate towards, because everybody who has access to like some level of pop culture knows about superheroes by now. I think that's a fair thing to say. So that immediately speaks to people. And it's so far removed from like the medieval fantasy that like the Dragon game offers, you know? So that's been another really fun way of like introducing people. The third thing, which is what we do occasionally, is sometimes we get like an influx of people because they've just watched Stranger Things and the new season has dropped in. So what we'll do is we'll run something called Intro to D&D. And what we do is we spend like the first 15, 20 minutes being like, this is Dungeons and Dragons. This is how you play it. But here's what's more important and more cool is that it's not the only game. If you're interested in sci-fi, these are 5 systems that you can check out. If you're interested in this genre, that genre, like everything all the way from like other medieval fantasy games to like cozy cooking TTRPGs. Like, there's something for everybody, right? So make sure you are exploring new things. My day job is as a marketer, so I often like feel a little deceptive when I do shit like that. But I think it's important to like just use the familiar to draw people in and then expose them to like what lies beyond. So that's another thing. And the last is just playing more diverse games on stream. So we try not to just do one game over and over again. We're constantly doing like mini campaigns that are set or one shots that are using different systems. So that's another way of like just visually showcasing how different games are played. But yeah, that's kind of
That's a lot. Thank you.
Long and short of it.
Yeah. That's very cool. I'm glad you brought up your day job as a marketer and digital marketing and things like that. So I'd love to segue into that and ask you, like, okay, so what does being marketing manager for Hunters Entertainment, I know this is a relatively new job, but just generally then, like, what does marketing for RPGs look like as a job? Like, what kind of skills are you using?
I only recently joined Hunters as a marketing manager, but I've been doing marketing for, I think, coming up to like 5.5 years now. So it's a sort of like skill set that I'm fairly competent in, right? RPGs, it's a very different ballgame than like, I don't know, tech or video games. I have this running sort of joke with someone I work with. It's like, there's no money in RPGs. So a lot of it relies on crowdfunding, right? And Hunters' primary model is to run Kickstarters, and that's how we fund our games. So it's less of other more traditional marketing practices and more of like crowdfunding specific marketing practices, right? So my day job, honestly, for Hunters is a lot about like doing PR work, which is reaching out to like influential sort of like news, you know, sort of journalists or just people in the space whose audience we think would enjoy the games we're making, and coming up with social media campaigns and sort of like project managing those and executing those to some degree, and because I have a team that I work with, so that's like what are interesting ways we can talk about our game and interesting ways people can engage with us. The other sort of thing that I do is a lot of the actual Kickstarter, right? Everything that's written in there, you know, the information people have provided, the visuals they're seeing, like I write down most of that copy, and I have a team that obviously constantly collaborates with me to, you know, make sure it looks great and reads well and gives you all the information you need. That's something that is a core part of my job, is like making sure we have like good marketing language and that we're communicating well to our audiences. And I also, though I hate it, I also have to do a lot of like advertising, right? Which is like, oh, the team's giving me X amount of money and I am free to spend it in whatever way I think is most optimal to like introduce people to Hunters and the games that we're making. So that's another sort of part of the job. Another thing I do is like work with our partners outside of our own team to, right. So for example, you know, our game is available on Roll20 or DTRPG and working with them to see if there's any cross promotional things we can do. All of those things, I think of marketing as a way of communicating to people that, hey, a cool thing exists, you might be interested in it. And that's not how I was taught to approach it. I went to like college to, like, I got a degree in this. And when I was in college, I was like very idealistic. I'm like, I'm not going to ever market something that I don't feel good about. And my lecturer, she is incredible. She was like, that's bullshit. You're going to work for some shitty agency and you're going to have to market vagina tightening gel and you're going to have to deal with it. And I was like, I'm not going to last very long if I have to do that. So I was just like stubbornness. I sought out games and I was like, I will do marketing for games. I would only put these skills to use for things that I genuinely like believe in.
Yeah.
And it sounds extremely fucking idealistic, and I can hear that as I say it, but it's something that's worked for me so far. It's something that I've been able to stay true to so far, like whether it's Hunters or whether it's like publishing Goblin, we're making like our own DTRPG, it's called Confluence, or whether it's like the video game studio that I work at. These are all, everything we make, I'm like, I'm fucking proud of that and I want more people to see it. And I think that helps me like be at peace with the kind of work it entails. It's helped in certain like spaces, like even with Desis and Dragons, like it's helped that I know how to like do some level of online marketing. Like again, if we created a community with the idea of like, let's draw more people in and we can't reach those people.
Yeah.
It's not going to work.
Yeah. In some sense, like, yeah, the existence of the internet has turned so many things marketing adjacent, right?
Yeah. Like my hope is eventually to like learn more game design and sort of work specifically in game design. And I made a game of mine like for like the duet bundle that we put together on Desis and Dragons, and it was like the first like fully finished thing that I made, and I'm sure it's like full of flaws and, you know, it's far from perfect, but being able to market it helped, because I could like talk about it in different spaces and use my understanding of like how to reach people to some degree to actually get some folks to read it. Jesus.
Tell me about this game.
Oh God, are you looking it up right now? Yeah.
I do know something about it already. This is Up All Night, right?
I phrased it as, it's a game about bargaining with your brain for one night's rest, I think is what I called it. Okay. And yeah, where one person plays the mind and the other person plays the person, and it's a sort of, it's very inspired by For the Queen in sort of like its prompt mechanic, though it adds certain other gameplay elements to it as well. Yeah, it was my first go at it and I had fun and I learned a few things and I'm excited to apply it to the next thing I make, which will be hopefully slightly less amateur than that.
What I like about Up All Night is that it's very clearly like a personal game, right? Like this is game design. This is the draw of it, right? That you get to make something that is clearly like comes from a personal space.
That game, the idea for it hit me at 3 a.m. when I couldn't sleep.
Yeah, I guessed.
I was thinking, it's like, wouldn't it be fun if I just, and like people actually read it and gave me feedback and had a few nice things to say about it, and I was like, oh shit, that's it's weird, like putting out this like very personal thing and then not knowing if people will find any value in it.
This is the vulnerability of making kind of art and putting it out there. Yeah, I get it. Well, I'm glad you talked about it on this podcast, and I appreciate it. I'm looking at the time. I've got these questions that I kind of ask everybody who comes on the show. In a section titled Infectious Enthusiasm, I ask my guest, what's a game that you had a lot of fun with and want to recommend to listeners?
Ooh, okay. I am going to very, very highly recommend Alice is Missing. And I played it for the first time before I got hired by the company that made it, before I knew that was on the cards at all. But it just feels like such a, if you like experiences where you walk away like with like a lot of emotions, and I know that's not for everybody, give it a shot. I will also really highly recommend Blasé Monotony. I played it with a friend of mine. It's created by Apri, who's an incredible human being. I will also, sorry, can I do more than one?
please.
Sorry.
don't apologize.
And the third one, it's called Bubble Bubble. It's like a one-page RPG by Ari, who's also a member of the server, a moderator, just incredible human being. And they made this game where you play witches who are looking to brew a potion. And it is my favorite thing in the world. So those are my current top recommendations.
Nice. I've played Alice is Missing. I had to nap after that game. Like, I had to go to bed.
Yeah, that's a long one. Yeah.
In the section called Tyranny of Numbers, I ask, what is a number or statistic that you think that you can share with people?
A number or statistic that would be useful to people. I thought about this. Hold on. Let me find it. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I found it. 70% of members in the Desis and Dragons server are from India. And it's a statistic that I use generally when I'm talking about building community spaces from scratch, because it's like, if you were ever like unsure of like creating something, being like, oh, I don't know if there's other people out there who would vibe with this, fucking do it. I'm sure there is a group that this will appeal to. And I just love that number because it makes me so happy to like acknowledge that there are people, there is somebody who is your person who will see you and be like, we're on the same wavelength.
That's cool. I mean, and also like I'm 70% is like 700 people, right? Like, or more. Like that's a lot of people.
I would be remiss if I said like, oh, it's huge, because in like the grand scheme of things,
oh, yeah.
over 1,000 members are still minuscule, right? Yeah. So insignificantly small in the grand scheme of things. But when I sit down and consider like what that just means for what we set out to do with the community, that's pretty incredible. So yeah, 70%.
Nice, thank you. Okay, in the section titled Replay, I ask, what's a story or anecdote you've heard about someone else playing either a game you wrote or a story from a game that you were playing in?
I am just plugging all my shit, but I have one for Up All Night, if that's okay. Yeah. When I put it out, the only thing I was thinking about, oh, this actually sucks, and people who will read it will hate it, and they will just... You know, and that will stay forever. Like, that was like the irrational line of thought that existed in my brain. This incredible writer named Alyssa Vischer read the game, and they read it when they couldn't sleep at night. And they did like this Twitter thread about their thoughts on the game. And they had very kind things to say about like how that game resonated with them. Like, they said this one thing that I was very, like, it felt really good to hear, was that reading the prompts, because the game asks you a lot of questions that the two players need to answer. They were like, just reading the prompts forced me to feel kinder to myself. And I was like, fuck yes, that was the intention. And I'm glad that it's working.
That is so cool.
So I guess, yeah, that's more of a personal experience. And I think... should I give you one that is not just about my shit?
Because that was beautiful. I would stop there. This is the last question before we do outros. This is a new section. I'm calling it All Advice. This is advice for myself. I ask you, what's a habit or a technique you're trying to get better at doing when you're at the table playing a game?
Let me think about this. Because there are a few things. Okay, yes. I play a lot of games with like, folks on stream or people who are like really engaged in the role-playing aspect of games. My IRL friend group isn't a group of people who are highly engaged with role-playing, right? They're there just to shoot the shit and have fun. And what I've realized over time is that, and safety tools actually helped a lot with this because we set the right expectations from the get-go, is just being okay with the idea that not every table I'm going to be at is going to meet my sort of like ideal game expectations, right? And I have to adjust the way I play to accommodate for the folks around me, especially when there are people who aren't as sort of like into the hobby as I might be. And it goes both ways. Like, people see me, my friends see me role playing, and they will like lean in and like, you know, give me a quippy one liner or like engage with that role play to some degree. So like, they're meeting me to wherever they're comfortable at, and I have to do the same. Like, I shouldn't let that expectation sour my role playing experience or my game playing experience. Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And I really connect with that. Yeah. I think there's this habit, there's a trap you can fall into of, you know, once you know what your preferences are, which is that you go into every space and go like, this is it. Like, this is the best way to do things. And okay, so thanks so much, Indrani. I really loved having this conversation. We'll keep talking, but for the benefit of listeners and anyone who stumbles upon this in the future, potentially, where can people find you? On the internet, not your house.
My address is... you can find me everywhere on the internet as at Nonagon Dice. That's Nonagondice. And that's on Instagram, Instagram, Twitter. Nobody uses Facebook anymore. And just like any other social media platform that pops up, I'm probably there as Nonagon Dice. You can find Daisies and Dragons on the internet as well. That's at DESISNDRAGONS, dragons. So they season dragons. We're also on Twitch, Twitter, Instagram, but most importantly, Discord. So if you go to theyseasondragons.com/discord, you will find a link to our server. Come play with us. Come make games with us. Do, like, it's a great community to be in, no matter where, like, who you are or where you are in the world.
I do dream about running this like open table game on the server at some point. Like, it's in my head. So yeah, maybe if you join the server, listener, maybe that means we'll get to play a game together.
Yes, Thomas will 100% run a game for you if you join the server.
I mean, now that someone said it, is true, I guess. Like, that's just how that's how the internet works.
Don't cut this out in post.
The Yes Indeed podcast was created by Mark Shepherd and run by me, Thomas Manuel. Thank you so much for listening.